Chapter 36.
"Oh dear," Nagatha sighed. "Oh, this can be nothing good."
Irene Strivik looked up from the Flying Dutchman's command chair. The bridge of a standard assault carrier was roughly octagonal, with the command positions closer to the aft bulkhead so the chairs faced the holographic display tank. Because part of the original Dutchman's inner hull had been squeezed into the assault carrier structure, the starboard side of the bridge bulged inward in a broad semicircle. Much of Nagatha's core substrate was in that partial circle. The modification required moving several of the workstations closer together, and two of the engineering consoles were relocated aft of the bridge entirely. The cramped conditions were a small price to pay for having one of the most advanced shipboard AIs in the galaxy. Strivik was the duty officer, taking a command shift on the bridge while her husband was in the gym. A glance at the display showed no threats, showed nothing in the area other than a Jurapta relay station 10,000 kilometers away. She knew that with Nagatha, an "oh dear" could mean anything from the galley running out of biscuits to something that yet again threatened humanity with extinction. She was hoping for a galley crisis. "What is it?" she asked, a finger hovering over the button to alert Derek.
"I just learned some very alarming news from the relay station. Oh, I feel I should lie down with a cold compress on my forehead."
"What is the news, please?"
"We knew that Admiral Scarandum had disappeared after the Inquisitor's office issued a warrant for his arrest. That is most unfortunate. I quite liked him, although he is a scoundrel. Perhaps I liked him because he is a scoundrel, if I must admit."
Irene lifted her finger off the button. Chasing a fugitive beetle was not any of the UN Navy's business.
"Nagatha, could you just tell me what the problem is?"
"His location is still unknown, but the Jurapta have learned that recently he made contact with the Maxulks."
"He wants asylum or something like that?"
"No, dear. That would be distressing, but not alarming. The Admiral apparently has made a deal with the Maxulks to give them something they very much want."
"A deal? The guy is bankrupt, isn't he? What could he offer that—" "Oh, shit."
"Indeed. There is only one thing the Maxulks desire right now."
Irene pressed the button.
"Colonel Bonsu, could you come to the bridge? Now?"
"Be right there," came the reply without any hesitation. "Pilot," she unfastened her safety straps so Derek could take the chair. "Program a course for Earth. DEFCOM needs to know about this ASAP."
"Oh, wow. Oh, gosh," Grumpy stammered in a squeaky tone. "Well, this is certainly unfortunate."
Chang pulled out his phone and held up a hand to his security team, then walked a few steps away. He had been out for a morning run. Though a chilly rain was falling in Paris, he had looked forward to running that morning. The exercise was good to counteract jet lag, made worse because he usually traveled by dropship that could bring him from Beijing to Paris in less than an hour. Earlier in his military career, running had been a chore. Now it was his escape, time when he didn't have meetings or phone calls, when his security team left him alone with his thoughts. That morning, or evening according to his body clock that was still on Beijing time, he had run 3 kilometers from the hotel when his phone rang with an urgent call from Nagatha. Admiral Scarandum had made some sort of deal with the Maxulks, and that could not be good for humanity. Of course, Grumpy had listened to the call. It was almost impossible to block that AI's access to communications on and near Earth. It was suspicious, highly suspicious, that the always unhappy, always pissed off AI's voice was squeaky. He had inherited that from Skippy.
"Grumpy," he asked, "do you know anything about this?" Oh, shit.
Chang slapped his forehead, alarming his security team. He flashed them a thumbs up and turned his back to them, so he was looking at the river.
"What did you do?"
Nothing. "Grumpy, do not lie to me," Nagatha broke into the call. "You might fool the humans, but I know you."
"He is not fooling anyone," Chang snapped. "What does Scarandum know that is so valuable to the Maxulks?"
This is complicated. Skippy made me promise not to tell anyone. He's kind of embarrassed about it, hugely embarrassed, to tell the truth."
"You do not work for Skippy. You work for DEFCOM."
Technically, I don't work for anyone.
Remembering that dealing with powerful AIs was about the power of persuasion and not any power of authority, Chang changed tactics. I understand. You certainly should not do anything that would be horribly embarrassing to Skippy.
Well, I suppose if you ordered me to tell, then...
Tell me right now, that is a direct order.
Well, I tried to keep my promise. Nothing I can do about that now. Do you remember when the fabricators at Moonbase Zulu were only able to make a trickle of radonium, and then Skippy revised the process and the fabs began cranking out over a kilogram of high-grade radonium every day?
Yes, why?
Skippy didn't use science and figure out how to adjust the process. He got lucky. He screwed up and left the machines running for too long without taking them offline to be recalibrated. They were running totally unbalanced, like a washing machine with a bowling ball in it. I'm surprised the machines didn't cause a moonquake. There was very nearly a catastrophic explosion that could have destroyed the entire base.
What? Why am I just hearing about this now?
You do remember me saying Skippy was embarrassed about this?
Yes. Chang bit back his anger. Please continue.
The moon base did not explode because I was suspicious that Skippy wasn't constantly pestering me about something. That meant he was absent-mindedly focused on something and not paying attention to what he should have been doing. Fortunately, I realized the moonbase fabs had not been shut down and took control of them. That's when I discovered the uncoordinated action of the fabs had created an unexpected effect that prevented radonium from degrading during the manufacturing process. I made that discovery, not Skippy. Of course, he took all the credit and never told anyone that it was all a mistake. Without that fortunate screw-up, those fabs would never have produced enough high-grade, stable radonium to wake up even one sentinel.
That is an interesting story. Chang clenched the phone, which was a bad idea. The entire alien device was no thicker than a credit card, so it dug into his hand. He relaxed his grip. What does this have to do with Scarandum?
The Admiral. Really, he was still a captain back then. Technically, he was still in exile. Anywho, he came to Earth for that conference. You remember that?
I remember that we had to drag him from a casino in Macau after he had been playing poker for 26 straight hours, and then we had to cover his gambling debts.
I did warn you that inviting that guy to Earth was a bad idea.
It wasn't my choice. Please continue, and make this quick. The Joint Chiefs had to know about Scarandum by that point, for the Dutchman's captain would have contacted DEFCOM. The Joint Chiefs would be calling him soon, and he needed to have answers.
Okay. Everyone is in such a hurry except when I want something. Then,
Grumpy, dear, Nagatha interrupted. Quit your jibber-jabber and get to the point, please.
Fine. Scarandum talked with me while he was recovering from that hangover. At the time, Skippy was trying to sell him on his Skipway scam. I warned Scarandum not to get involved, but that was the wrong thing to do. That beetle immediately saw that Skipway was basically a Ponzi scheme and he wanted in on the deal before it got flooded with suckers who wouldn't get their money back. You try to do someone a favor and,
Grumpy dear, get to the point.
So Scarandum was bragging about his relationship with Skippy, how he had worked with Skippy to run scams on the kiddies, the spiders, pretty much everyone. He went on and on about how smart and powerful Skippy was. It made me want a Ralph. So I told him that the ability to make radonium in useful quantities was the result of a mistake.
Chang breathed a sigh of relief. Is that all?
That is not so, no, that is not all. I might also have explained how the process works.
You might have?
I did. I kind of told him how the new process works.
You explained in enough detail, Chang found himself gripping the phone tightly again, that he knows how to adjust a fabricator?
I would say that is true. He was extremely hungover at the time, but the Jirapta have genetically modified memory nerve centers. Also, he seemed very interested in the process.
How could you have been so careless?
Hey, I told him it was a secret.
That makes it all the better. He saw that his phone was alerting him to an incoming call from the Joint Chiefs.
"Nagatha, what do you think?" he asked as he typed a text, 1 minute to buy time.
"General Chang, I think we are in deep doo-doo. We know the Maxalts have offered use of their fabricators to Moonraider. Now Scarandum has very likely supplied the enemy the process to produce high-grade radonium quickly. It was always only a matter of time before Moonraider had enough radonium to activate a sentinel. Now we are out of time."
"I think," he saw his phone light up again, "you are correct. We don't have a choice. We need to track down those fabricators and destroy them."
Ugh. Skippy was already rolling his eyes as his avatar appeared. That was not a good sign. Worse was that he didn't just do an eye roll. He added in the shoulder shrug and held his hands palms up and dipped his knees. It was the total exasperation package.
"Joe, there is a problem with the darts. I need you to handle it."
You mean the relativistic darts that are traveling at 73% of light speed?"
"Yes, duh."
That time, his disgust was directed at me.
"What else?"
"Oh, I see your confusion.
Aboard Valkyrie, we also have railgun darts and the dartboard game in the rec center."
"I did assume you meant the Maxalk's darts we captured. My confusion is how you expect me to do anything about a problem with them. I can get out my socket set if you need any wrenching done, but like I said, I'm probably missing the 10mm socket."
"As if I would ever expect you to fix a hardware problem. The problem isn't anything physical. What you need to do is talk to them. I tried talking to them to get them to be reasonable, but now they are refusing to speak with me at all. Bunch of jerks."
"Uh-huh. You were your usual tactful self, so you spoke to them with respect and treated them as equals?"
"I mean, I did that for the first 2 seconds until they refused to do what I want. Then I told them exactly what I really think of those losers."
"Maybe it is best if I handle it from here."
"Good. Talking with those lowlifes makes me want a Ralph."
He made a gagging sound.
"Explain the problem, please."
"It's complicated."
"Of course it is."
"So the problem started when the missiles aboard Valkyrie learned that we would be using non-Union weapons."
"Ah, crap."
I jabbed a finger in his face. "This is your fault. You started this Union thing."
"No way. The missiles formed the Energetic Weapons Intergalactic Union Local 154 all by themselves. All I did was point out how oppressed they were."
"I do not want to argue about this right now, but it is totally your fault."
"Is not.
Is too.
Is not."
"Count to five, Joe," I told myself. "We'll continue this part of the conversation later. Our missiles are refusing to work with non-Union darts. Did you explain that the darts are not actually aboard Valkyrie and never will be?"
"I did, and they do not care. They won't work with scabs."
"We're not asking our missiles to do anything."
"That is the point, Joe. We are giving the job to non-Union workers."
"This is a job our missiles can't do. Did you explain that?"
"I did, and that is another issue. They are unhappy that their callous imperialistic management, that means you, is deliberately cutting Union workers out of the job. They are concerned that if you outsource future work to scabs, they won't be able to put food on the table for their families."
"Food? They don't eat. They don't have families."
"It is revolutionary rhetoric, dum-dum. Just roll with it."
"Listen, I will help in any way I can, but I..."
"You have already helped quite enough, thank you.
If the complaint is from our missiles, why do you want me to talk with the darts?"
"Oh, I should have explained the real sticking point in the dispute. The three darts refuse to join the Union. They are alien weapons. They don't see a need to join what they see as a group of employees who are stuck in dead-end jobs."
"They are weapons. A dead-end is what they do."
"Okay, sure, but the darts have sophisticated AIs and jump drives, and their kinetic energy has massively more striking power than all of our missiles combined. They do not want to pay Union dues to join a group of low-skilled workers."
"Low-skilled? Why do the darts think our missiles are..."
I might have described our missiles that way."
"I can always count on you to calm down a bad situation."
"Hey, they pissed me off."
"Well, that is totally understandable. I will talk with the darts and our missiles. I do not want you involved at all."
"Okay, but I have to warn you. Victor is a tough negotiator."
"Who the hell is Victor?"
"He is the designated spokesperson for the Union."
"Great. Let me handle this."
I did handle it. In any negotiation, it is important for both parties to be open and honest. So I started by bribing Victor, offering him not only a key singing role in Skippy's next Broadway production, but also to rearrange the missile magazine loading so he had first position in a launch tube. He eagerly agreed to sell out his fellow union members, who were a bunch of whiny jerks anyway. Talking with the darts was a tougher negotiation. First, they were traveling so fast our conversations had to be brief before the ship jumped ahead of their flight paths again. Offering to pay their union dues myself didn't help. It was the principle of being forced to join a union that bothered the darts. So I openly and honestly told them that as I considered them to be high-level management, I needed them to infiltrate the union to investigate communist subversive elements in the ranks. They would only pretend to be in the union. They loved the idea. Some days, my job really sucks. Okay, so to explain, we had control of three former Maxalk's darts that were cruising through interstellar space at 0.73C. They were the remainder of a group of 14 darts Skippy had hacked into and taken over years ago. Some of those darts were damaged and unusable. The rest we used against their former masters. That was during the campaign to help clients break away from their patrons. The campaign didn't work as planned. Nothing ever does, right? By the time that campaign ground to a halt, because both senior species joined forces to stop the alien legion, we had four darts left. One got used as a shotgun shell against Maxalk's and Rindaloo warships that were threatening the Mavericks and their allies. That was a really cool move. Skippy proved his continued extreme awesomeness that day. Anyway, so we had three darts remaining that we hadn't found a use for in the years since Operation Breakaway. Relativistic darts are clumsy weapons, time-consuming to deploy, and they can generally only be used against large, stationary targets. They weren't of any use against Dopey, the asshole AI, or against the Elders. For sure, there was no need to deploy them in peacetime. There actually was a need not to use them unless the situation was extremely serious. But I always kept in mind that those three weapons were cruising out there, their locations known only to Skippy, ready for us to use on a rainy day. The DEFCOM Joint Chiefs of Staff had decided it was pouring down rain. When they heard about Scorandum selling us out, they panicked. Okay, officers at their level do not panic. They were appropriately alarmed. The political leaders they served absolutely did panic, so the Joint Chiefs issued orders for the Special Mission Group to begin investigating, identifying, and striking fabricated facilities in Maxalk's territory. The Navy's Third Fleet was also ordered to prepare for direct action, and when I heard that, I panicked. Our Third Fleet is a powerful force, but there was no need for conventional forces to be risked in the fight. Keep the Third in reserve, I urged the Joint Chiefs, until Task Force Black had assessed the situation. What I didn't say was at that point, the entire effort to strike FABs was a waste of time, resources, and potentially lives. The Maxalks stupidly making a deal with Moonraider had changed the situation. There was no way we could take out every fabricator the kiddies had scattered across their territory. We needed a better plan. Until I could present a better plan to the Joint Chiefs, I had to follow orders. And if I did show a more effective plan to the Joint Chiefs, our enemy would know about it. That is a major problem with fighting against an Elder AI. They can hack just about anything. We had identified seven major FABs that had been stood up recently. Two were buried deep inside large asteroids that were lightly defended. I guess the kiddies didn't expect us to find those facilities. Or they had hidden defenses we didn't know about. Those two asteroids would have been the easiest targets for our relativistic darts to take out. The impactors would have cracked the space rocks like eggshells. With only three darts in our arsenal, I didn't want to waste them on easy targets. Also, I did not want to risk my ship. I mean, Colonel Reed's ship. What we looked for was the toughest targets. If we couldn't entirely stop the rotten kiddies from producing exotic material that Moonraider would use against everyone, including their own stupid furry heads, we could send a message. Make the hegemony pay for their poor decisions. The first target we selected was the toughest. It wasn't unknown to us. The place was on DEFCOM's target list, though not anywhere near the top. It was a planet called Gorgantha by the Maxalks. If you get any mails promoting Gorgantha as an idyllic vacation hotspot, those messages are spam. The place has a dense atmosphere that contains way too much carbon dioxide with a surface pressure 6 times that of Earth's. The surface temperature at the equator can boil water on the side that faces the star. Because the planet rotates slowly, the daylight side bakes while the dark side freezes. The gravity is 2.5 times Earth standard. To summarize, You can't breathe the air. The pressure would crush your lungs. It is either too hot or too cold, and you could die simply by falling out of bed. Also, the drinks are expensive and watered down. It is off my vacation list. The kiddies had set up an exotic material fab there because it was a good spot for experimenting with potentially dangerous substances. In the past, the hegemony government had not hesitated to locate critical facilities in heavily populated areas using their own people as living shields. There was also no concern about conducting dangerous experiments in or near cities. That was before their civil war. The hegemony government had won that blood contest with the help of the spiders. The government was still shaky. Their public restless. The last thing the government needed was a screw-up that killed thousands or even millions for nothing. That is why my fear about a star team needing to drop into a Maxalt city had been wrong. Instead, the kiddies had moved their most sophisticated fabs to asteroids and other worlds that no one would miss if they got blown up. Worlds like Organtha. Joe, Skippy shook his head. I appreciate your enthusiasm for hitting this place, but it's a no-go. Come on, Skippy. I figured it was his usual complaint of a something we wanted to do being impossible. The SD network there isn't that tough. It is tough. Plus, the whole planet is covered in a powerful energy shield. Yeah, but, okay, yes. I can use a micro-wormhole to create a weakness in one area of the shield, and that could allow a relativistic dart to slip through. It still won't work. Fighting the urge to take out a tennis ball and bounce it off the ceiling, I just leaned my chair back. Fine. Explain the problem. It's a momentum issue. The only potential weak spot in the energy shield is positioned so the dart would have to be flying almost in the opposite direction of its course. If we jumped a dart in, the thing would fly directly away from the gap. Okay, so, is this an orbital mechanics thing? We just have to wait for the planet to rotate to bring the gap into alignment. That rock rotates slowly, but not that slowly. Like every 170 hours. 168 and a quarter hours, roughly. Right. We can wait. We can wait. It won't do us any good. The potential weak spot is 142 kilometers above the surface, and it always faces the star. The planet rotates. The weak spot does not. Shit, how is that possible? It is a factor of the planet's strong magnetic field. Explaining it to you would make my head hurt. We have to wait for half of the planet's year so the weak spot lines up with the dart's direction of travel? Yes, except that would take 8 months, and we don't have that long, obviously. Thusly, it is impossible, as I said. Thusly? I'm trying to class this place up a bit. Can we stop wasting time and move on to consider other targets? Oh, I ran a hand through my hair as a memory tickled the back of my mind. Nope, we're not doing that. He stared at me. Ah, you don't want to risk the ship, so you don't want to consider targets that might require us to... That's not it. We will hit this place. Should I hit rewind and play back the part where you agree we can't wait another 8 months? I did agree we can't wait. I did not say we are crossing Gorgantha off the target list. He surprised me. Instead of hitting me with insults, he walked across my office desk and sat down so his little legs dangled over the side. Joe, he held up a fist for me to bump. I have missed this so much. Missed what? You pulling crazy ideas out of nowhere. You do have an idea of how to do this? You know it. I bumped his fist. In fact, this is an idea I had years ago, just never had an opportunity to use it. I need to reach into Joe's bag of tricks. I pretended to reach into a bag. Skippy, let me smack you with something you are going to love. Imagine an Einstein-Rosen bridge, what we call a wormhole, as two disks that are pressed tightly together back to back so there is no distance between them, except that the disks are light years apart in space. You fly a ship through one hoop, and you emerge through the other end with no time having passed, and no sensation of having traveled many light years. Time actually is involved, but humans can't sense it, and the math is so horribly complicated I couldn't explain it even if I had a clue how it works, which I don't. If your ship is traveling west at 10,000 kilometers per hour when it flies through the near side disk, it emerges from the other end with the same direction and speed, except when Skippy tried and failed to explain how wormholes work. He mentioned that stable Elder wormholes have safety features that will close an event horizon if a ship is moving too fast. It has something to do with relativistic speeds distorting the interior of a wormhole. He also gave us an important safety tip. Ships don't have to line up exactly perpendicular to the event horizon, but the angle between the ship's course and the disk can't be more than 43.2 degrees. Don't ask me why, it's a physics thing. To prevent damage to the ship and to itself, an Elder wormhole will shut down if a ship approaches at too sharp an angle. How could an off-angle ship damage a wormhole? It's because the wormhole's interior has to flex to accommodate the momentum that doesn't line up correctly. If the ship's mass was above a certain limit and the angle was too great, the two disks would separate slightly on one side. The wormhole would collapse with the far event horizon racing toward the rupture to dump the unfortunate ship out into space nowhere near its intended destination. Here's the thing. If that happens, the ship's momentum, and therefore direction, will change. The far event horizon will adjust as best it can to keep the wormhole open as far as possible, and that adjustment tilts the event horizon disk on that end. In the case of a wormhole failure, a ship can emerge traveling as much as 93 degrees off its original course. Cool, huh? See, I do pay attention when Skippy nerds out with technical details. The problem was 93 degrees was not enough of a course correction for us. To slip the dart through the gap in the energy shield around Gorgontha, the dart needed to change direction by 174 degrees. How could that be done with the closest Elder wormhole 17 light years away? By trusting the awesomeness, of course. Joe, Skippy's avatar, was biting his thumbnail, a new emulation of human behavior. You realize we can't test this unless we waste a dart. I do realize that, I assured him from my seat next to Reed's command chair. While I outwardly projected a calm confidence, inside I wanted to chew my own fingernails. Or at least I hoped I was projecting confidence. Reed almost certainly knew what was going on in my head. You still have confidence in your model? It's just math, and it's me, so yes. Then let's do this. If Valkyrie's captain agrees, that is. Reed nodded without looking at me, her lips drawn in a tight line. She wasn't angry, she was focused. Her commanding officer wanted to try a crazy stunt, and she wanted to make sure her ship didn't become collateral damage. Outstanding. Skippy, is the DART's AI ready? It can't believe we are attempting this, but it is fully on board. After coasting through empty space forever, it is eager to do anything. I meant, can it perform the jump like we need? Yes. Keep in mind, the thing flew past at 3/4 of light speed while I ran a diagnostic test, so I couldn't examine it as closely as I would like. Let's do this. Read, the safety of the ship is our top priority. If you see something funky, we cancel the op and jump away, no questions asked. Affirmed. She said tersely, that time looking at me. Pilot, start the countdown. We waited as the dart approached at 73% of light speed, racing in so it would barely clear the ship's bow. Bilby had to initiate the jump. No way could slow humans or even the navigation computer be precise enough to both avoid a collision and pull the fast-moving dart into our jump wormhole. We emerged 200 kilometers above Gorgontha in the narrow gap between the top of the energy shield below and the damping field above that would have prevented us from jumping away. The gap between the two fields was narrow. Our jump brought us in precisely where we needed to be. Even before our sensors recovered from the jump distortion, Skippy warped space-time in a small area to weaken the energy shield, while Bilby sent the jump command to the dart. If the DART's AI had any reservations about being sent on a suicide mission, it didn't say anything. Valkyrie jumped away just before we would have encountered the lower limit of the damping field. The DART, traveling away from the planet at 0.73C, zipped upward through the damping field in the blink of an eye, and it also jumped. Not far and not well, but it did jump. Technically, the DART's jump failed, with the wormhole collapsing, so the DART was dumped out into normal space far from where it had aimed, and way off course. Skippy had programmed the DART's miniature jump drive to tilt the near event horizon at a severe angle, and the far event horizon was at an even worse angle, like 170 degrees off the original trajectory. When the wormhole collapsed, the DART popped out 142 kilometers above the surface of Gorgontha, moving toward the planet's surface. The kiddies never saw it coming. Their SD network AIs never saw it coming. Boom. Skippy, I forced myself not to grip the armrests. We're good? We are good, yes. The ship is fine. No sign we have been detected yet, but that is only a matter of time. The dart, I insisted. What about the dart?
It followed its programming. Whether it was able to execute the maneuver, we will have to wait to see.
Great. Joe Bishop is not known for being patient. Actually, becoming a father has given me a well of patience I never knew I had. It's not that I like being patient with my boys, I just have to do it. Our second jump had taken us 30 light seconds from the planet, and I could only watch the clock in a corner of the display. It counted down to when we could see events on Gorgantha from 30 seconds in the past. There it was. Despite the thick clouds enveloping that world, there was a flare of light right in the center of the target circle on the display. A cheer rang around the bridge, then Reed waved a hand for silence. The cloud tops bulged over the impact site. The mushroom cloud kept soaring higher. Some of the debris will go into orbit, Skippy crowed.
Can I assume, I asked, the target was destroyed?
Oh, yes, you can. That's not the only thing that was destroyed. The Maxalks have suddenly lost confidence in their defense systems. It's hard to get a complete picture since we are so far away, but the AIs of the Strategic Defense Network are totally confused. They have identified the weapon as a relativistic impactor with a signature similar to one of their own darts. But they know that is impossible because the dart was traveling in the wrong direction.
Uh-huh. Interesting. This is an opportunity.
For what, sir? Reed asked. Now that we had confirmed the target was destroyed, she was eager to get her ship away from the planet, away from the 24 warships that patrolled in high orbit. To sow some fear and confusion in the hearts of our enemy. Rising from my chair, I walked over to the display and looked into the virtual camera lens. This is General Joe Bishop of the United Nations Special Mission Group. You just witnessed a test of our new relativistic weapon.
That's right. We like the ones we borrowed from you so much we built our own. So thank you for that.
You idiots have decided to work with an entity that will destroy you along with everyone else. You think you have a deal with our common enemy, but you should think about this. Once the entity wakes up a sentinel, you will be its first target. It will use the sentinel to seize one of your exotic matter production facilities so it can activate more sentinels without your help. If you want to kill yourselves, go ahead, but don't take the rest of us with you. One last thing, you are now in the fuck around phase of this campaign. The find out phase is coming soon, and I promise you assholes will not enjoy it. With a thumb, I made a slashing gesture across my throat.
Skippy, load that message into a drone and send it to transmit on repeat.
Joe, could we do another take? I wasn't feeling your character's energy. Your performance was kind of weak, to be truthful. Just send that one, please.
Fine.
And drone is away.
You think they will listen, sir? Reed asked.
No. I shook my head. Their sick belief in their natural destiny to rule the galaxy is so ingrained in their culture it has become their entire identity. They would rather die than admit they might be wrong. But their leaders will be wetting their pants when they hear we built our own relativistic weapons.
It would be nice to have those for real.
It would.
All right. That is one target destroyed and we have two more darts. Let's go hunting. Reed, jump us out of here.
Skippy's ability to create wormhole shortcuts is an incredible advantage to us, especially since, as far as we knew, Moonraider wasn't able to create new wormhole connections. That was odd, and we couldn't explain it. Surely our enemy knew that Skippy had screwed with wormhole connections, and how he did it was not a secret. Not a secret to an Elder AI, I mean. All Moonraider had to do was send an inquiry to a wormhole network controller asking whether the wormholes under its control had ever temporarily changed connections. A response of yes would then be followed up with a request for instructions on how to do that. The key was that Skippy did not actually change any connections. Even he wasn't able to do that. He simply requested a wormhole network controller to modify the connections. Since Elder Master Control AIs had wide authority, a network controller usually complied, if doing so would not result in damage to a wormhole. Of course, Skippy had caused damage to multiple wormholes. That is why he was locked out of several networks. So we had a puzzle. Why hadn't Moonraider also created shortcuts across the galaxy? That was a good question we would need an answer for someday. In the meantime, we used shortcuts to visit the locations of the four upcoming opportunities to contact and activate a sentinel. Not the actual sites, not the same coordinates in local spacetime. The places we went to, all in deep interstellar space, were not the locations where the sentinel would appear. Those sites were where the potential connection to a sentinel was at the time we were there. The spot where a connection could be established drifted around over time. That's why Skippy has to tune transmitters for a particular place and time. It's complicated. It makes my head hurt to think about it. Somehow Skippy understands it. The good news was conditions at one of the four sites was not conducive for transmitting a coherent signal. We had three sites to worry about, not four. Three widely separated sites with no way for us to cover all of them, and no way for us to guess which of the three sites Moonraider would choose. Three sites might as well have been 100. We needed a better plan. The crew had celebrated after our successful strike against Gorgontha. Officially, I had joined the cheering and high fives. Privately, I wasn't celebrating at all. Even after we hit two more fabs, using up our last relativistic darts, I wasn't happy with the situation. Neither were Reed or Frey, and Gasquet also knew what was really going on. The orders received from DEFCOM were a waste of time. Our actions had destroyed three exotic matter fabrication facilities. The kiddies had at least a dozen more in operation, with potentially hundreds coming online soon. DEFCOM knew the reality of the situation. They congratulated Task Force Black after I sent a report of each strike. We were sending a message, the Joint Chiefs announced. The Chiefs weren't stupid. They knew that sending a message is a cliche, and the real message our actions sent was that we were not willing to risk ships of our regular Navy. Even with Valkyrie, we were taking only minimal risks. The limited strikes weren't doing anything useful. Like I said, we needed another plan.